The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. A brand new week. It is time for Need to Know on TKR. Kip Kiefer with you, as per usual on Monday morning, presiding over a brand new week. And I had so many different ways that I could go this week. I was going to do a show, and just to kind of give you the evolution of how these things come together every week. It's not a well-oiled, planned-out machine. I don't have a script. I kind of try to develop themes and ideas for what I would hope to be an interesting half hour or 35 or 40 minutes with you, whatever it times out. And thanks to the proprietor, Tony Curry, of this network, allowing me the flexibility, if I got 25 minutes worth of stuff or 45 minutes worth, it doesn't matter. I'm not held to looking at a clock while I'm doing this, because that would be an extra layer that would be very irritating. The nice thing, of course, about podcasting is you don't have breaks. I mean, some do. They get out and sell sponsorships to their podcasts, but it's pretty much straight through my thoughts. And the show I was going to do leading up to this weekend was, the past weekend, was a show that things that are pissing me off was going to be my theme. I am so flabbergasted at what's happening out in California. It just gets more bizarre by the day. But we'll save that one for maybe next week if there's not something that takes over. Because that's what frequently happens when I think I've got kind of a basic game plan. It morphs into something different when I get a different thought or hear a different tidbit that triggers a reaction that I want to share with you. And that exact thing, that thing happened on Friday, as I did a quick review on the internet of a couple of the independent news services. And I also go to right to the source. I like to the people that I follow when they convey some thoughts on a subject. And the thing that kind of sucks about X right now, and I don't know how many of you are, I still want to call it Twitter. You know, Elon, God love you. You have now, Elon Musk, genius and insane as he is, has now, for the third time in about 3 months, reposted or acknowledged a comment that I make. And even though Elon is a little out there, he's the richest man in the United States for sure, and a technical genius, and there's so many good things about him. But I think we've talked about here on the show that, you know, these people that are absolute geniuses have these beautiful intellectual minds, but the line is so fine between genius and madness. I think we saw it, the Russell Crowe movie, The Beautiful Mind, did a good job of kind of exploring that subject. I think the difference between, you know, absolute genius and insanity is just a short step away for these people. But still, to have Elon Musk recognize posts that I make or comments that I make on his posts, pretty gratifying stuff when somebody of that stature, hopefully on the genius side of the ledger on that particular day. If he's on the insane side, then I don't know if how big a compliment that is. But the bottom line is, it's pretty cool. So anyway, what triggered all of this preface and what the seismic shift in my opinion today was, I want to do a little bit of self-aggrandizement and a little bit of self-pity. So I'm kind of on that fine line today, because all of these events, and I don't know how much you all follow this, Tulsi Gabbard, who was an appointee of the Trump administration to be the director of national intelligence. That's a pretty big time job to give somebody that's not really been involved in the intelligence industry before. But that's one of the biggest reasons that I supported Tulsi Gabbard enthusiastically for this particular task. If you don't know her story, she was from Hawaii. She actually enlisted in the military as a young woman and served with honor. I don't know what ultimate rank she achieved, but she did her time in the military. She's also has been involved as an officer in the Hawaii National Guard for some time. Of course, she's got an education. She has served in various capacities. Hawaiian government, she was a Democrat before because there just aren't Republicans in Hawaii. I'm going to talk about my radio partner, Terry Quillian, quite a bit in this show. And Terry and her ex-husband actually moved to Maui. And Terry became, there was only one Republican legislator in the entire Hawaii scene in their House and Senate. And that particular guy was able to get her an appointment on the six-person Hawaii Election Commission. She was the only Republican on it. So the island is totally far left, extreme liberal policy, politics. That's just how they roll in Hawaii. It's like California on steroids. But Tulsi Gabbard came from that environment, so she started off being a Democrat and was actually elected to Congress and served a couple terms in the House of Representatives. But then she started to see herself like somebody that has integrity, that's not just going to continue to rubber stamp and vote yes for everything that the Democrat Party stands up to. Because right now, anybody that with a functioning brain understands that the Democrat Party is not your father's or your grandfather's Democrat Party, which was the party of the working man. My grandmother, who was a long, lifelong Democrat, one of the few women in government back as late as early as the late 30s. She was a career woman before there was such a thing. She was a lifetime Democrat because even though she got ridiculously wealthy, collecting a pension for over 45 years from the her retirement from the government, she worked 27 years and then was retired for, I think, 37 or 38 years, getting big government benefits and full, you know, medical care and all the different things that happen. But she still was a steadfast Democrat right to the end of her life at 97. She never lost her faculties, but she never really paid attention to the seismic shift that the Democrat Party had made to the left. This was a woman born during in 1917 and, you know, lived a long life, but still was a fearsome Democrat at the end, despite the fact that the last president that she saw elected, she lived to see, of course, Donald Trump take the mantle. Barack Obama was the last Democrat president who was philosophically about as different as Juliana Chambers as anybody could possibly ever have been. But that didn't change her opinion. She would get in these terrible arguments with my brother, who's also unfortunately deceased now. My brother was a staunch conservative. They would get in these bitter arguments, assaulting Republicans for being the party of the rich. When she's sitting on, you know, a fortune herself from serving in Democrat administrations. And of course, she was there in Washington all the way up through the time of even Richard Nixon. Dwight Eisenhower had served as president during 8 of her years in government. So she did serve in some Republican administrations, but the game was so different then. Republicans, Democrats had philosophical differences, but it wasn't like the night and day, completely opposite ends of the spectrum we have now. You've still got a lot of swamp rat Republicans, too, that want to straddle that fence and try to just get along because it's good for business. But on the other hand, the Democrat Party has gone so completely far left that they are off the charts to the point where we've got actually a socialist, Marxist, communist candidate is the Democrat nominee for governor, or I keep saying governor, for mayor of the biggest city in the United States, the most important financial city in the world. And we're about to see a communist elected to office as the mayor of New York. I mean, that's how completely out of hand things are going. The squad with AOC and Tlaib and the other Cory Booker, all the different people that are so far left in the Democrat Party. And they are the dominant force right now. If there is any such thing as a moderate Democrat, they are completely intimidated because you can look at the Democrat voting record. All Trump's nominees, all of the situations in the House bills where there's just a three-person margin for the Republicans right now, every single Democrat in every single vote, no matter if they're the most wild, far left Democrat or the most centrist, which, again, I don't even think there are such a thing as centrist Democrats anymore. I guess John Fetterman, the senator from Pennsylvania, is the closest thing because he comes out and kind of slams his party all the time with verbal shots and press releases and things, questioning the direction of the party. But John Fetterman doesn't put his money where his mouth is because John Fetterman still votes against every Trump and Republican policy that comes up. His voting record is absolutely perfect. He has not ever stood up to the things that he's talking about because he's already being demonized in the Democrat circles for having an opinion that's not along the radical left party lines. Anyway, with all that being said, I want to talk about Tulsi Gabbard coming out last week and really doubling down on Friday with the release of a lot of classified information that she has come across in her initial 6 months, about 5 months, actually took her about a month to be confirmed. In 5 months, she has dug up so much material about what happened in this country when Donald Trump was elected in 2016, the months leading up to 2016's election, and especially the first year, 2017, of the Trump administration. And what she has released is something that to me is extremely gratifying and totally validating, because what she has turned loose was notes handwritten by her predecessor in that job that was in the file that were kept by Clapper, the DNI under the Obama administration, right up to the time where Trump beat Hillary Clinton in the election. And without going into huge detail, because like I said, Tony gives me 35 or 40 minutes. I don't have an hour and 40 minutes. But I will tell you that these notes in the files from then CIA Director John Brennan in the Clapper file in the DNI archives, handwritten notes from a meeting that was held on January 9th of 2017, that's 11 days before Trump was to be inaugurated president and Obama was going to be retired after his second term, although he served a third term, as we all know, in the shadow administration of one Joe Biden. But I digress. The notes from Brennan confirm that there was a meeting on January 9th in the Oval Office attended by Brennan and Clapper and James Comey, the FBI director, and others. Joe Biden was there. Basically, it was a complete report on everything that went on, because that day, Trump had ordered, they had supposedly in the FBI and in the Department of Justice received information that the Russians were meddling in the election and Putin strongly favored Donald Trump to be elected president in 2016. And they were trying to manipulate the election to make sure that Hillary Clinton didn't win. Well, okay, we'll get back to that in just a minute. So the meeting was held to present President Obama, who all this was going on in the months preceding the election. They were trying to smear Trump. They were trying to embarrass him. They had come up with this document that's now known as the Steele dossier. Steele was a retired MI6, which is the British Secret Service, just like our Secret Service. That's where James Bond was employed and still is employed, because 57 years later or 60 years later, we're still making James Bond movies. But MI6, former employee and now informant for the FBI. The FBI, amazingly, had just fired, basically, or not so much fired him. He wasn't an employee, but the last bunch of information they had gotten from Steele did not prove to be credible. And so they had just informed him that they weren't going to be using him because they were paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars for this alleged information about Russians. And he is working with a U.S. Government official named Haskell, who later was appointed by the Trump administration. Unbelievably, she was definitely an Obama mole, but she was assigned to London at the time. She had developed Steele as an asset. I mean, there's a lot of baggage in telling this story in great detail. But the bottom line is that meeting was held to present Obama with the findings of the U.S. intelligence service, the FBI, the Department of Justice, to try and dirty up Trump to the point where they had proof that he was an agent and was working in conjunction with the Russian government to be elected president. That he was Russian collusion was the term that was used. And the report that was given to Obama, he looked through it, he read through it, he said, this isn't acceptable. This is all in Brennan's notes. He said, I want you guys to go back and find me the proof, because we know that this activity was going on. This is insufficient, because they basically gave him a report that said they didn't find jack squat. They didn't find any collusion between Trump and Vladimir Putin. They found no collusion. They found no real tangible or substantive election interference in the American election. Now, for Russians to fool around with our election and us to do the same in their country and countries all over the world, trying to manipulate results is something that every major government and every intelligence service and spy service does. It's just standard operating procedure. So if the Russians had meddled in any way, it was probably more to try and determine information so they could be prepared for whoever won. But the early on suggestion, and the reason I'm tying this into myself, which I had started the show by telling you, that it was tremendously validating, but also it was, you know, a situation where I have been having some, it's not bitterness, it's just disappointment, because in fact, the very first broadcast of our local program here on Talk 99.5 Birmingham, Kip Kiefer, Terry Quillian, with our brand new show on Inauguration Day, was our debut on January 20th of 2000. On January 20th of 2017, the day Donald Trump took the oath of office, was our very first show on Talk 99.5. And on that show, we started talking about all of this nonsense about Russian collusion, which they already were leaking. They were writing press releases. The operatives within the government, through a couple of PR and legal firms, they were giving information to be released by these sources to the New York Times and others. So all of this talk that the election was fixed and Trump wasn't legitimate was already flying around. And even on that first show, and especially the next day, because we were still caught up in all the excitement of the inauguration, that the great transformation seemingly took a big hit there, because Barack Obama, in his 8 years in office from 2008 to 2016, in those 8 years, had set the foundation for launching this great transformation of America. But what it really came down to was power and control, trying to ensure that Democrats would not have any exposure of losing the White House or control of Congress. And they were trying to take the steps to make that happen. And Hillary Clinton was the person that the torch was passed to, because maybe even more than Obama, she was at the point where power and control was absolutely, she just felt completely justified to be ascended to that office. And Joe Biden, the vice president, was passed over because Hillary was much more adaptable and a person that shared the vision of Obama completely hijacking this government. They talk about threats to democracy, constitutional crises. They were trying to lock up control of the presidency and all the operations of government. And Barack Obama did a fabulous job in his 8 years of really planting the seeds to make that happen. He was too politically savvy. He had to turn it over to a sharper tool, let's say, a more blunt instrument like Hillary Clinton, to really push it through to the next level and to set the stage for decades to come. But all that started to unravel when Donald Trump, absolutely out of nowhere, a candidate they considered to be a big joke, won the presidency and beat Hillary Clinton, because the American people could see what a vile threat she was to the very democracy now that they pretend to defend. Hillary Clinton was so unlikable in so many circles that even some Democrats, there were still some moderate Democrats at that point, broke ranks because they weren't buying what she was selling. She wasn't for the American people. She was the ultimate person that wanted the job for her own aggrandizement. And basically, the American people saw through that. So now the biggest curveball they never saw coming, but were worried about, because all this Russian talk and all of this trying to sully up Trump with this fake Steele dossier, which the FBI didn't buy it from Steele, but the Hillary Clinton campaign, as we now know, and we didn't need notes to have this. This was obvious through some leakage way back in 2017, that Steele dossier was bought and paid for as a political document from the Hillary Clinton campaign. So it was supposedly, quote, opposition research, but it was to smear Donald Trump, because, you know, I don't want to get graphic here, but it had all the stuff about him being in Moscow and misbehaving with prostitutes and golden showers and all kinds of things that, the first time Terry Quillian and I ever discussed this on the air, how ridiculous it was, she had just worked in the Trump campaign and was very familiar with Trump, with personal experiences throughout that summer. And, she said, this guy is the biggest germaphobe of all time. That is just such a ridiculous story. It just defies all imagination. I also immediately question, why would Vladimir Putin favor Donald Trump to win the presidency over Hillary Clinton, who he had been working with, and Bill Clinton before him? Certainly a hardliner like Trump, who was going to come in with a lot of economic approaches to things, the Democrat approach, the Clintons and the Obamas, basically, America, it's our responsibility to support the rest of the world. If you were Vladimir Putin, you knew Donald Trump wasn't going to have that opinion, that America, do we need the money? We don't need the money. Here, let's just spread it around all these places and buy all this influence. And so Vladimir Putin, it didn't make any sense that the most hardcore communist trying to rebuild the Soviet Union. And we know that's a fact by the fact that the invasion of Ukraine came during the shadow administration of the Bidens. Trump kept that from happening by being elected, because this was a strong man in the office of president of the United States, not a guy trying to make you know, nice with the rest of the world and let them do basically what they wanted. So it made no sense whatsoever that Putin was supporting Trump and trying to manipulate the election. Just a couple common sense things right off the bat that you weren't hearing in any other media circles. Of course, the other reason for that is because this amazing situation that has developed that is now the greatest political scandal by 100 times over, 1,000 times over in the history of the country, because basically the outgoing president had put together this, and I'm calling it, remember the Olympic team back in the early 90s that were put together, LeBron, it was before LeBron's time, it was Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and all of the great players, John Stockton and Karl Malone and et cetera, et cetera. The dream team that we finally got to put together to send to the Olympics when professionals were allowed to compete. Obama had the same vision in his last term because he had to manipulate events and ensure the success going forward. He had put together the Obama scheme team, and the scheme team consisted of all of these leftist thinking individuals who once again were motivated by power and control, because you know what power and control adds up to in the greatest growth enterprise, the most lucrative mechanism in the world? Power and control adds up to unthinkable wealth. It's all about controlling the money. It's all about enhancing all these people's ego and power, and also enhancing their opportunity to generate money. The bureaucracy, as we've been preaching the last few weeks in Washington, the fourth branch of government, the administrative state, is all to process and launder that money and get it in the pockets of everybody that's playing ball in government. That's what we've been living with. So the greatest threat to our country, our democracy, our way of life did not come from outside. It came from within, and it came from within our own government. I got inspired during this period over the next few months and all pretty much throughout that year, because by that time, the original Trump administration had come across all of the texts between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Lisa Page was the chief counsel to the assistant director of the FBI. And of course, Strzok was the lead investigator in the FBI. All of those texts that were being released in piecemeal, but not in chronological order. But when you kind of looked at it and put them in sequential order, it started to be a clear play-by-play of what was going on in this Obama post-term scheme team that he had left in place. And Donald Trump had gone in not knowing what he was getting into. He was not familiar with Washington and how it worked, and left way too many of those people involved. And it came back to blow up in his face. Remember, right away, Jeff Sessions, the pride of Alabama here, had been appointed as the DOJ, as the attorney general, and lasted less than a week before recusing himself on anything having to do with the Russia investigation, which opened the door in the Department of Justice for all the leftovers from, ironically, the last director was my radio partner, Terry Quillian's sister, Sally Yates, her only sibling. So talk about being immersed in the story. I had angles from every direction going on there. We had press from all over the country coming in and filming our show because they found it absolutely enticing that Sally Yates, the ultra-left acting attorney general before Sessions came into office, and her sister, Terry Quillian, was completely on the other side doing conservative talk radio in Birmingham, Alabama. So I got kind of pulled into the story and just became obsessed with trying to run down, trying to make sense of all this. In the meantime, we didn't even realize that the Department of Justice, now with Sessions completely neutered, continued to get FISA warrants to be able to spy on the new president and monitor communications and everything else. And, Sally Yates only lasted less than 2 weeks in her interim role because one of the first things Trump tried to do was to put a hold on travel from the most hostile enemies we had into this country, which any president should do. It was a security measure. They immediately called it a ban against Muslims traveling into the country, which it never was. 92% of the Muslim world still was able to travel into the United States. It was only 8% of the population in hostile countries like Yemen and Iran and other places that were not allowed during that time. And it wasn't a ban. It was a moratorium. It was a temporary delay to develop more stringent security measures, again, to fulfill what a president is supposed to do, protect the American people. But as I pieced it together more and more, I started seeing the links to the chain in all these different areas. And when I found out about the FISA warrants, it was just one more piece of the puzzle. But the Strzok Page exchanges gave me enough information to look at it sequentially and really form a strong opinion about what was going on. And I hosted for another current employee at Talk 99.5, had a mid-morning show. Richard Dixon came up sick on a Tuesday morning in February of 2017. And I used that three-hour program to lay out my entire work that I had been doing over almost that whole year. And I gave a very accurate assessment, as it's turned out, of exactly how this came to pass, who was perpetrating the fraud, what their goal was, what their end game was. And I did that on local radio. I didn't have, like Sean Hannity, a staff of 50 or 75 researchers and people talking to people all over the country. I didn't have any of those resources or assets. I had my own common sense, and I had my own understanding of government and how Washington had fallen into this cesspool swamp, and Trump was being duped by a lot of people like Rod Rosenstein, who was a leftover from the Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates administration. And, you know, Terry was asked continuously. We had HBO come here and follow us around for 3 days for a report on finding out if we were torpedoing the Obama agenda. Terry basically recused herself because she wasn't going to implicate her sister and you know, take the high road. And she says, you know, my sister and I have been on different sides of the fence for a long time, but we don't let that interfere with our family ties. And I certainly respected that and respect it to this day. So I really kind of got on my own, and, you know, with Terry's great support all the time, she left the program at the end of 2017. So it was February of 2018 is when I actually hosted for Richard and laid out the entire situation in great detail. And it's just amazing this week watching what's unfolded in Washington. As Tulsi Gabbard has released all this information, I got one of the most gratifying direct messages from Terry, who now lives in the Houston area. She's still on sports shows with us and is a fantastic broadcast partner to this day. But Terry sent me a copy of some of the pages from Gabbard's released information. And she said, I was reading this and I just couldn't believe, because I remember distinctly us talking on the day of your broadcast, because she had called me that night. She had heard my broadcast on the Richard Dixon show. And she said, I just remember there were things that you said on that show that day, word for word, what's now come out officially about what happened in this situation. And as ecstatic as I was, and I started doing my own reading and came across the conclusion that at least 90 or 95% of the information I devised on my own, without a staff, without help, without researchers, just depending on one thing, common sense of piecing it together, putting it sequentially, and looking at it and not forgetting important details, all of that added up to me being 100% right about that. But by the next day, I was kind of melancholy about it, because I was thinking, what an opportunity to be so right about that, but not really be remembered or acknowledged for it. It was kind of devastating a little bit from the standpoint that I don't have a regular political show now. And I certainly appreciate Tony giving me the opportunity to do Need to Know to talk about these things. But I have, just by whatever reason, developed a tremendous amount of expertise, and I'm at a stage where, and I hope this doesn't sound braggadocious, but I can see right through all of the screens, all of the diversions, all of the BS that's put out there, and I can see clearly what's going on now with unbelievable clarity and accuracy. And again, I'm not trying to blow my own horn. Obviously, nobody else is noticing. I don't even have a regular terrestrial political show. I'm still very active on X and other places, but the Obama scheme team was assembled basically to completely railroad this country in an opposite direction, besmirch Trump, and put him in a position to be ineffective and unpopular in his first term. And it didn't work because Trump, bulldozed his way through. He made a lot of mistakes. He alienated a lot of Republican voters because they didn't like his tweets and his kind of hardcore, almost non-presidential approach is how they framed it. I knew we were in trouble in the 2020 election when a good friend of mine's very conservative sister said, "I just can't vote for him. He's just a horrible individual." He was not running for Miss Congeniality. He was running for President of the United States. But history has a way, and God has a way of getting things right, because the 4 years of the outrageous Olly Olly income free, no limits, no restrictions, Biden administration really energized this country in a way that a second ter Trump term in 2020 could never have done. It really woke people up. And I am gratified to be one of the earliest people to be standing from on the mountaintop, yelling warning signals to my fellow citizens that this is all part of this great transformation of America, to make America a globalist citizen, and to do the things that the world expected of us. And to hell with American citizens, your freedoms, your liberties, your rights. Yeah, they might have to take a big step back, but this was more important. And the important thing is, at the end of the day, it wasn't about anything more than profit and power and control. That's what motivates these people. That's the dirty little secret. That is the premise of the Obama scheme team, and now it has taken a big blow because it's exposed and drug all of these jackals that were trying to hijack this country from within our own government. This was not an outside force. There is a lot of outside forces certainly supporting them, but this is a completely different animal. This was the greatest takeover attempt in history, and it looks like we've avoided it now with the election of Donald Trump. God bless all of you Americans who voted for the president, whether you like him or not. We've got administration officials now shining the brightest of lights to expose what this nefarious plot that I first figured out 9 years ago is actually a true thing. It was not just a speculative fantasy. It was absolutely proof positive. Trump knew it from day one when he, after 1 week, told the intelligence people coming in, giving him daily briefings, "You don't bother to come back. We really don't need this," because he knew right away by what they were telling him, how they are trying to spin things. They were trying to manipulate him into going the direction that they recommended. And that's not what Trump was about. And it's why he was the absolute fly in the ointment, the monkey in the wrench, the pain in the ass that they could not have, because this was about the only guy in the country you could have had come into that office and independently run the deal. And then I got more affirmation later in the year when he met with Vladimir Putin in Helsinki, and when they came out to face the media, some snide CBS or ABC reporter asked him right off the bat, because in his remarks he had said, "I asked President Putin, did you have any influence or manipulation in the American election? And he absolutely denied it. And I've got a good enough relationship with him that he had no reason to, because I end up winning the election. So why would he not to tell me the truth? The very first question Trump got in Helsinki was, so you believe President Putin instead of your own intelligence apparatus? And he squirmed for a second and thought about what he wanted to say, and he did not say that he believed. He says, I have no reason not to believe President Putin. And he did not address the part of the thing about trusting his intelligence, because absolutely by his body language and his reaction, and I think I'm the only commentator that even said this post that event, I could tell right there he was not going to endorse his intelligence people, because he knew they had been weaponized against him, and they were working against him, trying to tear down his administration, discredit his presidency, and get back to business with winning the 2020 election. And because of COVID, which is a whole nother sequence of shows to talk about, we're going to get the facts on that at some point. That was no accident. That was no natural phenomenon. That was a desperate attempt by the people trying to perpetrate all of this change and transformation and power and control. That's what derailed the Trump administration. And now the American people have seen through it and put him back in office, and the transparency and light of day is being shined on what I told you 8 or 9 years ago was going on. I am validated, but I'm also a little bit sad that my voice was out there way back then, and you can look it up. And it's kind of bittersweet for me personally, but it is more gratifying to know that my country is on the path to recovery and being back to the founding principles that we all hold so dear. So that's it for today. Kip Kiefer celebrating and whining at the same time, but also telling you that all is well now, because we are back on the right track. And the threat of the great transformation, at least for now, has been severely damaged. Trump flattened the Iranian nuclear objective. And also Tulsi Gabbard this week dropped a mother of all bombs on the nefarious Obama scheme team, which in some circles still exists, but has been severely damaged and almost completely decimated by this week's events. I'm Kip Kiefer. That's Need to Know for this week. We'll be back next Monday with more. Thanks for listening.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.